The Nine News podcast is brought to you in association with Freddie Flaxman. All right, everybody, and welcome to the Nine News podcast, episode 292. And you would think, listeners, that after 292 episodes, we had learned the golden rule of recording a podcast, which is to press record. So this is take two for us this evening after a fantastic, and Stu, I really thought it was 15 minutes worth of top quality tactical analysis that we discussed not a few minutes ago, but sadly no one will ever hear it because I forgot to press record. Anyway, thank you for joining us, listeners. I'm Nick Draper. I am joined, as always, by the face of the sport, the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. I didn't make any slip-ups during the last 15 minutes either, by the way. And then straight away I've made one. I can't get my words out. Anyway, thank you for downloading the show this week, however you have done so. We are reviewing our games with Hartlepool and Gillingham from the past week before we're looking ahead to the visit of Doncaster Rovers on Saturday and evaluating our start to the season down in League Two. As we said earlier, Stu, we're still getting ourselves used to checking the League 2 scores and not automatically going to the League 1 ones. Because as I was searching to research Doncaster's last league fixture against Sutton United, I was scrolling through the League 1 fixtures results going, "Where are Doncaster? Why have they not got Doncaster's game?" It's because I was looking in the wrong division because I'm an umpty.
I think also is the fact that we've, you know, Doncaster played Gillingham twice already and they were League 1 last year and Doncaster on Saturday. So I think it's also down to the fact that we just assume that they're League One clubs. You know, we got relegated, but we still play League One, technically what we think is League One clubs. But yeah, I was saying to you before, wasn't I, that, you know, my Sky Sports app is following League One. I've tried to change it. I think I've done it, and it just doesn't want to change. So, you know, it's obviously a one season loan, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? One season loan, it's going to look, he'll be back next year, and Bob's your uncle.
Sounds like me, Stuart. Sounds like it doesn't like change.
Change is good. Change is good. You've got to embrace change.
Sometimes. I'm looking forward to a change in the weather, I'll tell you that much. It's about a billion degrees, but we'll talk about that later because Doncaster on Saturday is going to be fun in that regard. But anyway, let's look back at the past week on the pitch. The draw with Hartlepool, we'll do this in chronological order. Let's start with the league game. So we went from a comfortable 2-0 victory against Gillingham on the opening day, travelled to Hartlepool, who had got a bit of a spanking, 4-0 in Poland at Warsaw. So they were looking to get first points on the board, perhaps get some positivity in the camp. And I think at the end of the day, as we might have even said this earlier, Stu, both sides happy for a point and probably happy, more than happy, to settle for the point in the end.
Yeah, I think, you know, Hartlepool obviously got beat 4-0, so they would have definitely wanted to not, you know, have two defeats the opening games of the opening to the season. I don't think we went there for a point, but I think we got to a stage where we weren't disappointed that we come away with a point. And, you know, as we say in the league, if you can win your home games and pick up points on the road, and they can just be, you know, sometimes it's nothing wrong in drawing a couple of games, just accumulating points. I think maybe we're not used to the draws, etc., in terms of picking up. But if you're going to do well in a league, and you know, it's a different situation for us, you know. But points on the road are not a bad thing. So I think it was a must not lose for any of the teams. And I don't think there's nothing wrong in us coming back. You know, 4 points, 2 clean sheets. I think we've done our first podcast of the season. I think if we'd said that, I think we'd both take it more than happily.
So 2 clean sheets from 2 games. As we said, the last season, we took until the 7th of December to get 2 league clean sheets. That was the way at Accrington Stanley, our last ever victory. Well, hopefully not ever, 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 but last season, our last victory in League One. We're very pleased with that. Again, started with the same 11 that started against Gillingham. A few more minutes at the end for Young Coombs and Hudlin, who then got starts in the week. But again, it all... 2 games into a 46-game season, manager's gone looking, as you said earlier, Stu, looking to get the team gelling, getting used to playing with each other, keep the same 11, keep that familiarity, keep that consistency. I think, without wanting to say this is a process, but it is a process across a season. So we're looking more perhaps at performances, and if you can pick up a point as you go, even better.
Yeah, and let's not forget, in the summer, we highlighted the fact that we had a big summer ahead. You know, we got interim chair with Mick Buckley. We've got a managing director to recruit, a head of football operations to recruit, a new manager come in, totally different to the club. And we let quite a lot of players go. It's a lot of change, and it's not all going to click overnight. We have got some players late in, you know, in terms of Hudlin and Nathan Young-Coombs. We probably got a couple more to fill, potentially. You know, still a rumour going around of Luke McCormick being wanted by other clubs, you know, once he gets back from his injury. You know, that might be. But ultimately, at the moment, we are a few players down. So I wouldn't say there's nothing to panic about. It's a long season. Yeah, 46 games. It's a very long season. And two games in, I'm happy how we are. You know, and if you look at, you know, on FIFA, you know, they have the ultimate team, the chemistry within a team. I would say we're no more than about 60%. I think we've got a lot more to... And that chemistry will only be built up in games and in training time. And it probably won't... Until we get to maybe September, you know, we've got Barrow at the end of the month and we've got quite a big, busy month. But it probably won't be until we sort of get to the beginning of September when we really start to see this team and what it's capable of.
You mentioned the word panic there. You say there's no reason to panic. No, there's no reason to panic at all, Stu. It's so early in the season. We've got 4 points from six. We've got two clean sheets. However, it was something we discussed. Perhaps a problem of the, and I know some people that have been listening since day one of the podcast will be sighing at me mentioning this at the moment, but this is perhaps a problem of having the internet, having social media, having an opportunity to discuss games and tactics all week long, perhaps leads you to overthink a little bit, perhaps a problem of having a podcast every week as well. And yep, probably, yeah, over-analysing, I'd say. Made the example in 1998, we won on the opening day at home to Spurs. We won 3-1, so we won by two goals. And then the following week, we went to Derby away from home, 0-0 draw. And it got to full-time at Derby, went 0-0, thought, great, point on the road. Didn't think any more about it until the next game. And I think that's where we are. Panic seems to be from those that I see commenting that are, I'd say, are quote-unquote panicking or unhappy or whatever. It seems to be more of an expectation thing. And I said, I have no expectations for this season. I'm just happy with us not going down again. And it doesn't mean I'm not expecting us to struggle. I might have been a few weeks before the season, but as you've mentioned there, the late comers into the team, Davis and Young-Coombs, good signings, very reassuring signings. So they have made me realise we're not in any danger. So I'm just going to enjoy it. However, there are some that are thinking we should be pushing, looking for playoff place, looking for promotion. And they're probably expecting a little bit more from that Hartlepool game, for example, where you'd want to go and perhaps beat a team that are tipped to struggle.
And do you know what? We need to, the word enjoyment is spot on. We need to enjoy it. I don't know anyone who really enjoyed, I think we enjoyed Plough Lane because, you know, it's a lovely stadium and it's home. But I don't think that many of us enjoyed the actual, you know, between 3 and 5 o'clock. I don't think many of us enjoyed that. So I think it's really important we enjoy it. I enjoyed Gillingham when we beat them. I didn't get overexcited when we beat them because in a way I'm expecting to win more games in League Two. Mm. That, you know, I'm not saying we're going to win promotion, but I'm hoping we might potentially get into like double figures of wins. How mad would that be? If you look at the league table last year, teams that finished mid-table got into double figures of wins. Mm. So I think it's going to be a lot more enjoyable. I've sort of noticed is, and we had it on the comment section on 9 Years TV after the Gillingham defeat, and I think it was Anthony Hayes, Pat Hayes, who was saying we need to get a number nine, and I think there's someone else saying we need a 20 goal seasons forward. I just think we got a little bit spoiled with Joe Piggott because before then, we didn't really have a Lyle Taylor before that. It's not easy to go out and buy a 20 goal season striker. And Davison isn't going to be that, but he probably will set up quite a few. So I think we've just got to settle. League table doesn't take shape until we're about 10 games in, you know. And it's probably a little bit of Hartlepool. Who are Hartlepool? Well, we never won at Hartlepool. That's our first point. You know, and we've got Barrow in a couple of weeks. And we probably, you know, fans will probably go, well, we should beat Barrow. Well, they went to Stockport and beat them on the opening day of the season and got a... a late winner at home to Bradford City. So, hey, look, you know, the league's changed. We've just got to settle, just got to acclimatise and see where it takes us.
You mentioned the Gillingham game there, so let's move on to that. The Cup defeat in the week. 2-0 defeat, two goals in the 90th minute, pretty much, injury time. Mikel Mandron, Jason Green, both substitutes for the Gills, with the winning goals. Johnny Jackson afterwards seemed really upbeat. I feel like you're talking there about team chemistry, teams gelling, and also players getting minutes. So I think from an opportunity for to get some players some time on the pitch together to get to gel with each other. So young Coombs and Hudson is the best example. They started up top. They got an opportunity to play. He was really, really happy with the way we went about the game. We had lots of chances. We had lots of shots on goal. We got to rest some players as well, which is great. Some of the more experienced players, Alex Pearce, Lee Brown didn't feature. So it was a good exercise. I think Johnny Jackson was happy with the exercise and what he got from the performance and the 90 minutes. It's just the result. Obviously, it's disappointing. But as we said before, 11, 12 times now we've played in the League Cup since 2011 and we've won two first-round ties. It's just not something we do.
Record's rubbish. And do you know what? This isn't an excuse, but a Carabao Cup or League Cup, as it's basically known, it comes at the wrong time for everyone, I feel. It's just like, you know, the third game of the season, in amongst, you know, we go to Mansfield, Crawley, we've got loads of midweek games coming up. It's just something, yeah, and we've got, I know, you know, it's not one of our favourite competitions, but we've got the Papa John's coming up as well, which we have to, you know, we have to participate. Those games will be good, to be fair, of getting game time. Because anything I worry about is I feel like, you know, hardly needs a pre-season. Alex Woodyard looks like he's about 4 weeks off in terms of getting back to full training. We don't have the under-23 league anymore, do we? So I'm hoping in a way we use a Papa John trophy for that and maybe get some under-23 friendlies, because we do need to get game time up for these players. But yeah, I can see Johnny Jackson being comfortable. I think, you know, we pass the ball well. Our wing-backs are a threat. Jack Curry needs to calm down a little bit because he's going to get himself way too much notice. You know, you've got a player there that has just literally come in from a loan spell at the end of last season. End of that season, and done amazing. And do you know what? Mark Robertson was at the ground on Tuesday after the Gillingham game. We bumped into him at the end. And he was honest and said to us, he goes, you know what, I wanted to bring Jack back. Maybe in hindsight, I should have. But ultimately, his development has, let's be fair, that loan move, a whole season in men's football, he's come in and he doesn't look intimidated or anything, does he? Do you know what I mean? And no. I think we have to, and it's not about a Robbo, you know, loving session. It's not about that. But it's also recognising that Jack Curry's actually come back from a loan, a whole season loan. And you can see the benefits of it. So it's something hopefully that we can continue, because he's come back and he looks a player already.
And three 90 minutes for him so far this season. And we expect he'll start again on Saturday. Young players we've got coming through as well. David Fisher, Quayne Bartley, they got minutes on Tuesday. Isaac Odunderi played nearly the whole game. At right wing back. So that's, again, just getting experience, getting these players in the squad, getting game time. So it's a useful exercise. It's just, in terms of the result, I think the main criticism I've had, all the chances we had, don't think their keeper really had nothing too much to do. He didn't have to work particularly hard. We said there was a couple of chances in the first half. Nathan Young-Coombs had a flick at the near post. Hudlin had the best chance. When Ayoub nicks the ball on the halfway line, counter-attack play in, bit of a tame finish, in truth.
Yeah.
And then Josh Davison has the best chance near the end, doesn't it? And 0-0 goes through into the box, left foot straight over the bar. And you just feel like if their keeper was, maybe we could have asked more questions of him.
Possibly. It was interesting how the subs worked, wasn't it? Because I thought when we brought the subs on, we brought Chislett on, we brought Davison on, Davison up straight away. I really like Davison. And I don't think he's gonna. I think, you know, we'd do well for him to get 10 goals this season, but his work rate and his I feel like the aggression as a forward, he's not going to be bullied by anybody. No. He's going to give centre-halves a real problem. And yes, you know, left foot shot, I don't think it's his strongest side, but it just felt, you know, with those subs that come on, you know, Chizit all of a sudden gave Gino a different problem. We sort of got more room for a sell, which is my, because I just don't know if we're getting enough. I don't know if we can find the right position for a sell. And ultimately, he's just getting doubled up and taken out. You know, Hartley Ball, not a professional foul, but you know, the old pullback, you know, take a booking.
Yeah.
Did that at Hartley Ball. I think he did that at Gillingham.
Tactical foul.
And it happened again on Tuesday night. You know, he was taken out straight away by Reeves, and there was a little bit of afters, you know, from that. But I think Asau has got the ability in this league, no doubt, to go past players, you know, stand them up, go past them. We've just got to find a way of making sure we get the best, we maximise his threat. I don't think we did it enough last season. I think we need to, you know, sometimes with Asau, he needs to know that if he's got two people on him, actually him shifting the ball and getting the space elsewhere is actually better than him sometimes going past the player. But that's the youth of him. But it's exciting.
Where do you see his best position? And just for now, he started the first two league games up front alongside Davison. Tuesday night, he moved in behind sort of the same position Ethan Chislett had played in the league.
Yeah.
Do you think he's going to carry on in that just behind the two strikers? Perhaps Young Coombs comes in and starts with Davison.
Yeah, he can do, but I still feel our midfield and our forwards the distance between them, I feel, is just a little bit too much at the moment. I think McComber is having to, you know, he's a luxury, but not even a luxury. That's a bad word. He's a Rolls Royce for player, isn't he? Let's be fair, right? He glides. He can get the ball. He can get, you know, someone gets too tight to him, he can roll them and go. He's going to give midfielders a hell of a problem this season. But I feel he's a little bit too detached away from forwards and certainly as Sal. And when Chislett come on Tuesday night, it felt like we all suddenly got a bit more room, as if there was more flair on there and they had more than one person to worry about. I sometimes like a Sal when he drops out to the wide right, because actually sometimes coming in there, he can be quite dangerous. There was a couple of times when he came off the line, got the ball, played it into the middle, and then he goes and roams. And sometimes he's better when he can do that, rather than being if we're not getting enough possession in the front two, he sometimes can be quite easy to mark, and he gets the balls back to goal. So I think it's really important for us to get the balls into good positions with him. But Lone Duke McCormick at the moment, we're short on him. So we are a little bit, what I would say, our playmakers on there. Because as I was going to say to you, I was saying on Tuesday night, Nathan Young-Coombs comes with a great reputation. I don't know what his strength is. And that may sound really stupid, but he's not fast. He's not strong. But McComber said in the interview that he can do nothing for half an hour and score a goal. And
yeah.
So he's obviously a finisher, but he's no good as a finisher to us if we don't get the ball in a box as much as we need to.
Yeah, as I say, only the real sort of one half chance that he had on Tuesday night. We would get him. Would get him in more goal scoring positions.
He's a large impersonator. Really, to be fair, and that's me being a bit. What's the word? I think Damien Young-Coombs is going to be a good player. I'm not saying he's going to be rubbish, but at the moment, I just feel like he's a Lotto lookalike
and an Enzo Amore lookalike for the wrestling fans out there. So you can't teach that. The result, we shouldn't be too surprised. It's a mini upset. If you place teams in their current league positions, we are above Gillingham. So you could argue it's a mini upset. But if you look across the competition as a whole, 12 championship clubs, that's half the championship, were knocked out by lower league opposition. That's mad. I don't think I've ever known that to happen quite so far. Four League Two teams beat League One opposition as well. So perhaps that's a combination of just teams resting players. Maybe it's just one of those things. It's maybe an anomaly this season. Who knows? But that's what it is. Anything can happen in the cup. The evening itself, aside from football, it was a really strange evening. Let's start with the. We are going to come on to the Ben Reeves thing. Don't worry. But I just want to talk the attendance for a start. 3,088. Play that game at King's Meadow a few years ago. We ain't getting anywhere near 3,088. Gillingham at home 10 days after having played them at home in the league in the first round of the League Cup. We didn't get 4,000 for West Ham. When West Ham played in the League Cup at King's Meadow, we didn't break 4,000. That's a Premier League team. So I think that it's just the problem of when you've got the whole ground open, that it looks a lot less and the ground does look a little bit empty. But only, I think only Bradford, Mansfield, and Doncaster were League Two time teams that got bigger gates than us in the week. Bradford and Mansfield had Hull and Derby at home, respectively. So they were local derbies against bigger opposition who would have brought lots and lots of fans. And Doncaster somehow got 4,000 for Lincoln, but Lincoln, for some reason, took 1,000 fans. I don't know.
I'm trying to think, that's not local, is it? I don't know.
Local-ish.
If it's a Plymouth Pompey sort of derby sort of thing, then I can understand it.
Yeah, I think they're closer than Plymouth and Portsmouth, but it still doesn't strike me as a strange. It still strikes me as strange that they took 1,000 there. Anyway, it must be something else going on.
It does.
I think we should be quite happy, really, with that attendance overall. No, some people thought we should get more, and perhaps we could get more if you market it, but I think it's a hard one. The competition is, especially in these early rounds, is not one that captures the imagination.
I do. I get your point about, you know, we didn't get 4,000 at King's Meadow, and 3,000 at King's Meadow would have been great. I suppose you look at it from a sense of point of view that you probably look at it about percentage that you got from. So we had 7,700, didn't we, roughly, for the Tottenham home game?
Yeah.
And then you look at, I suppose you look at percentage wise, you know, what was the difference percentage wise? And, you know, King's Meadow, we couldn't get. You know, King's Meadow was only 4,500, didn't it? Hey, look, do you know what? The tie is difficult. So my dog is attacking me. The tie is difficult anyway. Gillingham, it's not, you know, I know the Gillingham lad we had on our show, Matt, was like, I'm not really going to do a second journey to Plough Lane in such a short. And I don't think he would have been alone on that either. Do you know what I mean? We could have marketed a bit different. Opening the whole ground isn't, but then it was because of the bench holders, wasn't it?
Yeah, we have to open the whole stadium for these games because of the bench holders. So the bench holders that have seats in the east stand, they need to have the opportunity to purchase their seats. So that is why all four stands were open. But aside from that, strange evening. Why? Well, okay, the atmosphere was a bit strange. We had this weird thing in the second half where the south stand decided they wanted to keep the football, which was, their timing was perhaps inopportune at 0-0. It's not normally you do that sort of thing when you're sort of 1-0 up against a team with 5 minutes to go and you're time wasting. It seems an odd thing to sort of take up to do.
Yeah, do you know what? It's really interesting, actually, because I laughed at it. I found it quite funny. But then maybe that's because I've gone back to, like I was saying previously, that I'm trying to enjoy Plough Lane. Mm. So maybe my happy mood meant I enjoyed it. I found it quite amusing. But I get it. And I heard a few comments on social media. I suppose in my head was like, do you know what? I think this game's going to penalties. I don't think it's going to make much difference. I think I'm a kid at heart. So I found it quite funny. Especially when they said, can we have our football? I think they sang a chant, then they, can we have our football back? Which was probably the loudest chant we had in the evening. But that was the sort of evening we had, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was an odd evening, and I don't know. I think there's something we can look into this more, especially with the south stand. I think we just got to be a bit wary of things, but I'll save that for another day. Let's keep it light. The weirdest thing was Gillingham scored their first goal, and we haven't even talked about their disallowed goal, which I haven't seen, and it seemed to be after a long. So Gillingham scored, their players didn't really celebrate, which was weird in itself. The linesman wasn't flagging, but then he called over the referee to have a conversation. And at the end of this long conversation, the goal was disallowed. The linesman stood with his flag up to indicate offside. So who knows? The official word we were given was a foul on the goalkeeper. And it did seem that Nathan Broome was the only person actually arguing or talking to the officials. It was a very strange moment. But anyway, the goal didn't stand and Gillingham didn't need to score it anyway because they got two other goals later on.
I was just going to say, the referee did talk to the line, but it was only after Gunter literally run the whole...
Oh, was it Gunter?
It was Gunter that run straight over. And obviously that experience, I seriously think that if Gunter hadn't gone over there and raised the issue, the goal had stood.
Yeah, it was stood, yeah.
Could there be no... And it was one of those things, wasn't it, where, you know, VAR in the Premier League, the longer it takes, the more you chance you think it's going to not be given. It's like they're looking and, you know, and I don't know what they were discussing. It looked, the only thing I could probably sense would have been a foul on Broome. Because it looked like he had the ball and he didn't have the ball. So I can only think that they said he had two hands on the ball and he got knocked out. Mm. You're right, the referee referee gave a line. But then, to be fair, both linesmen didn't really have much of a, what's the word, and didn't have a bad game. But we had the other situation, didn't we, where Ben Rees was trying to get a ball that was being sat on by our Mr. Sam.
Yeah, let's go to that now, and I'll come back to the weird thing in a minute. But okay, so Ben Rees, you'd have seen the footage on social media, I'm sure, but I don't know. Ben Rees had been on the pitch. He came on as a sub, been on the pitch for maybe a minute, if that, and tangled with Asau on the touchline, pulled him down, shall we say. And then as the ball remained resting between Ayoub's legs as Ayoub lay on the touchline, the ball was still on the pitch. The referee had blown his whistle for the foul, and Reeves just decides to kick the ball as it is between Ayoub's legs. I was right in front of it. We'd moved. It was a strange evening because also we'd moved. We sat in slightly different seats in the West Stand just for the sake of just sitting somewhere different for a change.
You come out of your posh seats then?
Came out of the posh seats and came to slightly just as posh seats, just with just literally on the pretty much in line with the 18-yard line, right at the back. And it was right in front of us. And it was really odd. It was like the whistle went and then everyone stopped. Ayoub was on the floor. And then Ben Reeves just thought, I'm going to go and kick the ball. It was so bizarre. I'd love to know what the referee's explanation for not producing a card there was, or a red card there, sorry, was. Whether it was a red card or not, you might have different opinions on it, but I'd love to know the reasoning behind the decision he reached at the end of it. Because I just think Reeves was looking... I think Reeves came on and he was told... Ayoub had already got booked, by the way. Ayoub had kicked out at their centre-half and had got correctly booked. So he was on a booking. So I wondered, did Reeves come on and had Neil Harris said as he came on, look, just try and wind him up a little bit, see if he can get something else, see if he can get him to react to something else and get himself sent off, and maybe that's what he saw an opportunity to do.
Well, we're going to have that situation, aren't we? And to be fair to John Jackson, he didn't take Sal off. I noticed once he got his booking, Terry Skiverton called Sal over. So I thought he was going to be like, you're going to be off, but he just literally pointed to his head as if, like, you know, just concentrate. And I was pleased with that in a way because, hey, look, do you know what? We shouldn't have to take off a Sal because he's close to being sent off. Mm. He's one of our best, you know, let's be fair, he's one of our top players. Otherwise, we're going to have that all the time, aren't we? And, you know, he has to learn to curb that enthusiasm. Do you know what? The Ben Reeves situation was really weird because he'd just come on. He then got mugged off by a Sal. He got stood up. Went round him quite comfortably. I don't think Ben Reeves like that. And then, yes, he does go fishing for the ball. I'd be truthful. I've seen it back, and it's not as... I don't think there's not as much aggression as, like some people say, his stand. He just went to go and get the ball. It wasn't really... Well, one, it wasn't in play because the referee had blown his whistle. But I think... I know some people said, well, it probably was a yellow for the first and a yellow for the second. Whereas I felt the referee gave a lot of players a chance. With it anyway. It was his first, he'd just come on. I don't think there was enough aggression in it, but, you know, you see them things given, don't you? Do you know what I mean? And the referee asked the linesman for his opinion. Again, they took ages. At that time, it was all sort of going off a little bit. The fourth official come down the touchline, took Ben Reeves towards, a bit closer towards, and you sort of sensed in a way that they can all communicate now, can't they? You sort of sensed in a way he was being moved away to the halfway line because it'd be easier to send him off, and then he just gets you yellow. But like I say, at the time I thought it was a red, but then you get caught up in the emotion of it, don't you? But looking back at it, I can probably understand why it wasn't given.
I can understand why it wasn't given. Just for reasons you said there, but I would love to actually know what the referee's viewpoint of it was and what he thought and what Ben Reeves thought. Did Ben Reeves use the argument, oh, the whistle had gone, but I didn't hear the whistle, so I thought the ball was still in play? All these sorts of things. You just don't know. I'd love to. I don't believe that for a second. I believe full well he knew what he was doing. But as you say, it wasn't quite as aggressive and certainly was no stamping or kicking of us out, but it was just a really weird incident.
I think what it shows, though, right, is that Asau is going to be dangerous. Ben Reeves got too tight, literally too tight, trying to win a ball he couldn't. And Asau is really strong. He's done it a couple of times where he just rolls people and he just takes them out of the game. And they either commit a foul or they let him go. And it's, you know, I think that's something that he's got, you know, I think it's another thing that he's got to his game this season. And like I say, we just need to get the best out of him. But he's going to be a target. He's going to be a target all season. I guess we're just going to have to accept that.
Yeah, and I'd say there's an argument to say that in terms of just ability, Magoma, Asau, and Curry are three of the best players in the division. But
Jack Curry just scares me a little bit. Scares me how good he is, and he scares me that he's already getting. You can tell he's getting attention already from scouts, and rightly so. That's what the scouts do.
Right. Oh yeah, the last little thing. Sorry. When Gillingham scored their first goal, this guy, like in the front row, must have been a Gillingham fan sitting with like a Wimbledon mate or something, and he seemed to stand up on the sort of like the wall at the front of the stand, facing towards the crowd with his back to the pitch, but then he slipped and fell backwards onto the playing surface, hilariously, like comedy fall. And then as the steward went to go and get him, he just sort of got back up and scrambled and ran straight back in. It was so random. I couldn't work out what was going on. I was like, was that a Gillingham fan trying to celebrate and goad us? Was that, what was that? Like, if anyone can shed any light on whatever that was, it was one of the weird, I told you, Tuesday was a weird evening. But anyway, talking about weird things, let's move on to our new feature, On That Side of It, in which we have 3 minutes to discuss a footballing topic. This week, Stu, it is the BBC's decision to no longer read the classified football results at 5 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. They just abandoned it because they've decided that they would rather have like interviews with Premier League managers before the 5:30 kickoff, which they have commentaries on now. I could not give a flying Liam Trotter what the Brentford manager has to say before his team plays Man United on Saturday. I don't care. Pre-match interviews with managers generally don't really say that much, to be honest with you. So why this obsession with Premier League? Anyway, it's also an obsession with just forgetting about tradition. And that is part of the Saturday tradition. Yeah. Listening to the classified football results, listening to James Alexander-Gordon, trying to guess by the intonation in his voice what the actual result would be. You'll remember the days, you know, Manchester United 1, West Ham United 0. It'd be like, and now they've got rid of it. Just got rid of it. What? Is there nothing sacred anymore? Programmes have gone. Lots of League 2, if you go to a lot of grounds this season, you're not going to get a programme. That's a staple of your match day experience. Now, I know people say they're not buying programmes anymore, but especially for people going to their first game, or whatever it might be, or groundhoppers that like to go and visit every ground and they take the programme as proof, as evidence that they've been there. They might not even get a ticket now. They might get a little e-ticket on their phone. No programme to buy. What is going on with the foot? What is going on, Stu? I feel like I'm living in 1984.
It's just not a surprise. It's not a surprise to me. You know, it has changed, and you know, tradition, I get all that, but you could argue now a 5:30 kickoff on a Saturday afternoon for a Premier League team is now not traditional, but it's becoming the norm now, isn't it? So, Hey, look, do you know what? I think realistically, I think, you know, BBC and Sky and that are driven by what fans want or what the most popular things is. And unfortunately, the Premier League is just the be all and end all now, isn't it? And it's a shame. Hey, look, I don't listen to those scores. Sometimes when I'm at home, I might do the latest scores. But nowadays, the problem is with social media now, you know the scores, don't you? But yeah, I still think you're right. It's a traditional thing, and you can always guess the score, can't you? Or it's a draw, by the way. I always wish sometimes though they done with us sometimes and deliberately done that voice, and actually it wasn't a draw. It was like a 5-0 or a 7-0 defeat, as Exeter did at Cheltenham in the week. That would be great. It'd keep you on the edge of your toes, wouldn't it? But it's not. I'm not surprised. I'm not saying it's right, but I'm not surprised.
Thinks, Stu, like there's lots of people in this world that still don't use social media, don't have apps on their phones giving them the scores. They, especially the older generations, and they'd be sort of listening to the radio all afternoon, maybe. And at 5 o'clock, they think, right, that's it, all the games are done. I'm now going to charge. Maybe partially sighted people as well, living alone, whatever. They might not have the option to all these things. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. That is our 3 minutes on that one.
Well, to be fair, you took about a minute and a half with your rant. Which I knew you would do anyway, because it's traditional stuff, isn't it?
I'm surprised I lasted a minute and a half. I don't normally.
Can we, with this game or with this section, can we literally start the 3 minutes from when you finish your rant?
Yeah, well, the introductory rant and then the 3 minutes. Yeah, we could do. We could try that. We could try that for next week. I'll let you choose the topic next week, Stu. So there you go.
Oh, thank you. I'll pick something that will wind you up even more.
Beautiful. Right, it's time for our new game, Jackson 5, where I ask Stu 5 general knowledge questions on a theme related to football and AFC Wimbledon in some way or another. In honour of us hosting Doncaster on Saturday, I remember the last time we played Doncaster, we drew 2-2, having been 2-0 up, and they got a 2-2 draw. They had a good comeback that day, so I thought my theme this week would be comebacks. And cool. See if you can remember these classic Wimbledon comebacks. So, Stu, question one. In 1998, we were 3-0 down at West Ham, and we came back to win 4-3. Somewhat famously, I think you would agree.
Yes.
Who scored twice for us that evening? So who scored two of our four goals?
So the goals were... Marcus Gale scored, didn't he? Cuckoo? I'm going to go for a cuckoo.
Not Gale, no.
But I said Gale first, so your first answer.
When is always you the said one Gale you scored, but a cuckoo scored the winner. But Marcus
That's
Gale
what I remember. I saw it. Cool. Yeah, so my first answer was Marcus Gale, so.
I don't think we can give you that
one. It's probably the only one I get.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure. I have faith. Question two. In 2014, we were 4-2 down at Carlisle. But we scored two goals in the last 10 minutes to get a 4-4 draw. But who scored our 93rd minute equaliser?
I'm almost positive it was Aziz.
It was.
Because he looked as more surprised as we did when he came over to celebrate to us. Adi Aziz,
you have one.
Hey. Yeah,
you got one last week, so you're on par from last week.
Well, yeah,
I have faith you're going to get more this week. Question three: in 2016, we scored four goals in 10 minutes to beat Curzon Ashton from 3-0 down to 4-3 up. My question is: do you remember the name of the Curzon Ashton player who scored a hat trick that day?
Oh, my days. He was a Scouser?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Do you know what? No. Oh, do you know what? I can see him. I can see his... What's the Scouser name? Must be wrong with it. I should say that.
Jeez. Can you imagine what you're about to say?
Well, it weren't Aldridge. he was a Scouser. Actually, he was a Scouser.
Scouser name. Mickey McGyro. There you go.
No, I can't think what it was. Oh my days!
Should I put you out of your misery?
I can tell you how he scored the goals.
Yeah, I can remember the goals very clearly. I couldn't remember his name.
No, I can't remember his name.
Adam Morgan.
That's Scouse name. Yeah, Scouse I don't forget name. That.
There we go. Question four: the day after the 9/11 terror attacks in New York City, we threw away a 3-0 lead with 25 minutes to go to draw a Nationwide League Division 1 game 3-3 at Selhurst Park. My simple question is, who did we play that day?
I think it was Pompey.
There we go. Portsmouth.
Wasn't that when Pompey was spending loads and loads of money, and I'm trying to think they had a playmaker in midfield. Who did they sign?
Well, now, I'm not sure if he was playing that day, but Prozanecki was the one you're thinking of.
Yeah, do you remember that was Harry Redknapp, wasn't it? Was he there at the time?
He wasn't there at the time. He was just before. It's just before he came in. But they still had some
loads of money.
They had big name players: Lee Bradbury, Mark Burchill, Peter Crouch scored that day for Portsmouth. So yeah,
I do remember that well.
Their manager that day was actually Graham Ricks. Moving on, question five: in 2004.
I was going to say, you don't really need a coat at the moment, do we, for this weather? But yeah.
In 2004, we won 5-3 at Chessington and Hook United, despite being 3-1 down with 15 minutes to go. My question about this game was, how many red cards were shown officially?
I think we had a couple sent off, didn't we?
But how many were shown in the whole game? I mean, not just us.
Officially, I'm going to go for, I see we're three or four. I'm going to go for four.
Officially, it was five.
Oh, wow, was it?
Officially, it was five. Two Chessington and Hook players, whose names escape me, with all the best of intention, best will in the world. Shane Small King. Shane Small King was sent off. Gareth Graham was sent off as well, and as well, our manager was sent off for complaining. But I say officially because I think a lot more people got sent off that day. I actually think, if you ask him, I think Trev got sent off.
I was going to say, I think Trev did get sent off for that, and I think that was a similar, wasn't he, when he got sent off? Did he get sent off at Godalming or something?
Yeah, I think so.
To be fair, I think the referee could have sent everyone off at that day. But yeah, do you know what? I really, whenever you go back to like the Combine County days, I'm always like, we got through so many players, didn't we?
Oh, gotcha.
Okay, do you know what I mean? Like, if you're trying to name them, but cool, what was a five? I didn't think it was five. I thought it was three or four, but yeah.
Yeah, but 2 out of 5, 100% increase on last week. So yeah, let us know how you did, listeners, at 9YRS Podcast. Right, we need to quickly go through then final bits. We have got Mansfield Town away next Tuesday, which is a really, really tough place to go. Yeah. But before that, we're going to concentrate on the visit of Doncaster on Saturday, like we said. You don't want to be sitting on the subs couches or benches or whatever you want to call them these days in this weather, because it's going to be like 37 degrees and they will be sticking to that leather, which is going to be horrendously hot. So I'm not looking forward to it. Anyway, Doncaster, we've said, got relegated with us last season. They ended up finishing above us in League One, bizarrely, somehow, despite how rubbish they were. They finished 22nd. This season, however, they're expected to be comfortably mid-table. Not the top 20 pod predicts 11th. 442 magazine also predicts them to finish 11th. Gary McSheffrey in charge, as he was last when we last played them. First managerial role, took over in December last year. Lots and lots of players left in the summer, but Tommy Rowe stayed and Kieran Agard stayed, and they are two good, good players. Yep. Kieran Agard, I'm sure, will get a warm welcome to Plough Lane on Saturday, I'm sure. And then obviously they've still got they brought Lee Tomlin in the summer, as we discussed last week, with his ridiculous sending off. Adam Clayton is also one to watch out for them. The captain, experience in midfield. I am told Adam Clayton is fine. Score prediction?
Yeah, do you know what? I think we'll win. I think we'll win at home. I think we'll bounce back from the cup. To say it's not even an upset. The cup defeat, standard cup defeat. I can see it being a 2-0 win.
Yeah, so Doncaster so far, they drew with Bradford, as we know, last week, on the opening day, 0-0. They beat Sutton with two late goals last week, and they had the defeat to Lincoln, where they actually looked like 3-0 they lost, but statistics suggest it was a closer game than the scoreline would suggest. So they haven't lost yet in the league, so neither have we, which often leads to perhaps a game ending up being a draw. I might say it'll be a 1-1 draw, but we shall see. Leighton Orient versus Mansfield is the pick, obviously, of the other games, because we want to see how Mansfield do before we have to go up to Field Mill. Field Mill, not Turf Mill. Field Mill.
Well, yeah, and we could bump into Anthony. Well, not bump into Anthony Hartigan, but of course he's signed for Mansfield, isn't he? But I think he'll take a little while to get a start in. Well, you know, probably start on the bench. But yeah, Mansfield. Hey, look, John, they spent quite a bit last season, didn't they? I think their budget's still decent now. But again, do you know what? Maybe it's just me being foolhardy. I'm not overly worried about going there. And do you know what? We'll probably benefit from these teams who have spent well, because the expectation at home will be for them to attack us. And I think we're probably a better counter-attacking team than we are a sort of a forcing attacking moves on other teams. If that makes any sense. Do you know what I mean? We're not really attacking teams.
Yeah, I know what you meant. Well, that's it. Highlight of last week then, Stu, for me in the division. It's still too early, really, to be concentrating too much on results. I'm interested that Crewe won 3-0 against Harrogate, only because Rob McDonald got rave reviews, but also not sure quite how good. Crewe are top. I think they've won both their games, but I'm not quite sure how good they actually are. I think time will tell. But anyway, highlights for me. Tom James scored another absolute worldie for Leighton Orient after the week before. He scored another one against Crawley with the winning goal. Have a look at it. Half volley into the far corner. So that was my highlight.
Barrow for me was, again, you know, Bradford. You know, when I think Bradford equalised on 90 plus something, and yes. it was down their end. Bradford had a humongous amount of people there. I think they had more people at the ground than there was actually living in Barrow. But the goal scorer gave it a little bit of shush to the Barrow fans, and then they went down and scored later on and got a win. So, yeah, Barrow, the team to watch. And of course, they come into town. Or coming to Wimbledon in a couple of weeks.
couple of weeks' time. My low light of the week was nothing to do with League Two. There wasn't really anything to go on. I just wanted to reference this as the Premier League was back, and you know my thoughts on that, Stu. But my low light this week, and I'm sure Liz Truss will agree with me, Fulham charging £100 a ticket.
That is a disgrace.
And that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And to be fair, that's their dearest ticket. Their cheapest ticket, I think, was £65, which I think is more. I think that's more of a concern because ultimately, you know, the people that can pay £100 will pay it. It's in the top seat. But that's ridiculous. Do you know what my low light was? Is realizing that Watford are on the TV again for the third time Friday. Well, actually,
all you need to say there was Watford and just leave it at that. But yes, I have noticed that they've not had a Saturday 3 o'clock yet.
No, their literal three first games of the season will be on TV. I didn't pay for a season ticket for Watford.
No, and you wouldn't either. They'd have to pay you to go and watch them. Anyway,
yeah, it's this Burnley thing, isn't it? You know, company is obviously Burnley have all suddenly become a very attractive club in the Championship. Mm. Anyone's been there, it's not attractive. And trust me, Vincent Kompany is not living in Burnley.
Not a chance. Not a chance. Oh, well. Anyway, that's it for this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. 9 News TV will be previewing the game on Saturday with Don Carter on YouTube and Facebook, so look out for that. And obviously, we will have updates from both games this week on our Twitter at 9 Wires Podcast. But for now, Stu, thank you very much for joining me this week.
Thank you.
Alexa Bliss, bag first, milk last, 2 + 2 = 4, and we shall speak to you again next Friday.